Thank you. So when we picked the theme for this retreat, as Norman said, I think last night, a year ago, it seemed like a really good idea, and it seems like an even better idea, as Norman also said last night, that we're doing this. Molly and Norman have already done such a great job of introducing the theme and of giving us ideas about how to respond, that I'm deeply grateful for that. And I had to rewrite my talk. I'm only kind of kidding. So because this is what I do, not this, but I look things up in the dictionary. So I looked up, just in the regular dictionary, upheaval, which is a noun, and it refers to a violent or sudden change or disruption to something, causing difficulty or trouble. So it's a noun, that stuck with me. Uncertainty is an adjective, so it describes a noun, which means not certainly known, not able to be relied on or depended on, which sounds a lot like impermanence or dukkha to me. And the noun of upheaval sounds a lot like impermanence, right? Conditions changing. Opportunity, also a noun. Good chance, favorable occasion, chance or opening offered by circumstances or conditions. So, okay, that was interesting. Upheaval and uncertainty seem to be pretty much everywhere right now. We feel it inside us. We feel anxious. We feel stressed. We can't sleep. We never have enough time. We don't know what to do. And out in the world, it seems chaos reigns. We don't know what to do there either. So I get the paper every morning. I have done so for many, many years, and it has always been one of my most favorite activities. Hopefully on the porch, with tea, with the sun rising in the east, hitting my face, it's given me much joy, but not so much anymore. I feel like I should read it, but I don't really want to. You all know how this goes. Another school shooting, another hate crime in a place of worship, another tweet. The ice caps are melting at an alarming rate. The emperor penguins, did anybody not see March of the Penguins? The movie about, anyway. The emperor penguins have no chicks, so they have not had chicks due to the changes in the environment. Flooding and wildfires are rampant. War and conflict seem to be everywhere, and northern communities are literally sinking as the permafrost is melting and the infrastructure cannot hold. And everywhere we hear, we see, we know people who are desperate to find safety for themselves and their families, who are seeking refuge and sanctuary wherever they can find it, and they are risking their lives and dying for that. I get agitated by what I read in the paper, and I don't really like feeling agitated. I feel it in my belly. It's a churning. It's restless. It feels like anxiety. It makes me want to move, get up, get away. It's unsettling and unpleasant, and I want it to go away. So I start reading a story in the paper, only to abandon it partway through. I look out the window at the trees, I listen to the birds singing, or I move to another story, hopefully something less agitating. Sports, maybe, although we can't count on that anymore. Or I go on Instagram, and I look at cute animal videos. I do. So do you. Or photos of beautiful places that I think I'd like to visit sometime. I like these stories much better I feel much less agitated and less uncertain, at least for now. Or, instead of avoidance and distraction with more pleasant things, I distract with a familiar and well-worn rant or story about the state of the world, about political leaders, about bigotry, about corporate greed, and its ongoing mission to drive relentless consumer culture, which is killing our planet, not to mention creatures and people. Even the Antarctica is not safe, and so on, and so on, and so on. I have practiced the story very well, and perhaps you have your own versions of this rant. And although this rant makes me feel much more certain about things, I'm still really agitated. I'm angry. I am insistent that things should not be this way. What is wrong with people? How can these things be happening? What is going on? What is wrong with all those other people? I judge. I blame. I feel right. I feel better than. I feel solid and certain. And I like this better. No uncertainty for me, at least for now. We are never more sure of who we are than when we're in the grip of that kind of righteous anger. The problem with my attempts to feel better, my distraction or my anger, my attempt to find some solid ground, as you probably all know, because I'm sure we all do the same things, is that they don't work very well for so long. I like looking out the window, and I like having imaginary adventures in far-off places, and I really like the certainty of a good rant and the sureness of knowing how things should be. But damn, that paper comes every single day. There is no avoiding it. Not to mention that we all have our own personal planets, worlds. We all have the inherently difficult job of living a human life, living and loving and just getting through the day. So these outside upheavals and uncertainties and the inside upheavals and uncertainties, they interact, they affect each other, they're not separate. Sorry, just have to make sure I don't get my ingoing and my outgoing mixed up. It is easy to feel overwhelmed, frustrated, afraid, anxious, vulnerable, guilty. We carry these in our bodies. It can seem pointless, futile. What on earth, literally, what on earth can we do to change these situations, inner and outer, which seems so very much out of our control? Nothing is staying still. Everything is changing. The planet is on fire. Everything is a mess, and we don't know what to do with it. So I did think about canceling the paper, but really, we know there's no point. So I decided that I would talk about refuge for this talk, because the idea of my attempt to find some solid ground through either avoidance or fighting is not a misguided instinct. Maybe that's why we're here. Maybe we're here on retreat because of upheaval or uncertainty at home or in our practice or the way the outside world affects us. Maybe we came looking for escape or sanctuary from this turmoil, to find comfort in the structure and the routine and the support that's available here. Or, if you're like me, maybe being here on retreat is creating upheaval and uncertainty for us. Either way, it will unfold as it does. And refuge is good. The instinct to find this solid ground. It's just that we usually look in all the wrong places. So I picked refuge, and then I instantly regretted it. Because it became clear to me that although this topic of the refuges and the three refuges that I'll mention, it gives me a great deal of latitude. I could talk about just about anything and it would be covered. And that was the problem. I had 54 pages of notes. So it gave me no neat and tidy kind of structure. I had to make decisions. And that part of what I love about the teachings is that, you know, if you pick up one thread of that carpet and you just give it a tug, like the whole thing comes. All the teachings come. Any door will take you. But you do have to pick something. And that was what made it difficult. So I'm going to talk just briefly about the three refuges as formal refuges, which some of you may already know all about. In the teachings, in the suttas, there are the three, they're called the three refuges because there's three of them. You might also have heard them referred to as the three jewels, and I'm sure there's other titles. So the first is refuge in the Buddha, the second is refuge in the Dhamma, and the third is refuge in the Sangha. So these are the three refuges that are taught. They are pretty simple statements or vows that people take, that basically go, I go to the Buddha for refuge, I go to the Dhamma for refuge, I go to the Sangha. Some of you may well have done this. It can be done many times, it can be done at home, it can be done at the start of any period of practice. So I looked them up in the Majjhima Nikaya. Where did that page go? Oh no, I was going to say a little bit more about them first. Sorry, I knew was missing something. So what do they mean? So refuge in the Buddha, in a one sentence, means to recognize and acknowledge and take refuge in the possibility of awakening that we each have. And we take the inspiration from the story of the Buddha's awakening to kind of give us that inspiration and to trust that that possibility lies within each one of us. Refuge in the Dhamma is to take refuge in essentially in the teachings of the Buddha. So all the teachings, and that would include, Norman talked last night about the three characteristics, impermanence, dukkha, and not-self. So I'm glad that I'm not coming to explain those. Refuge in the Sangha means to take refuge in community. Exactly what we're doing when we're here. Traditionally, that would have been the community of monks and nuns. And in today's world, it means any group of practitioners that come together to sit in community. A one-off like a retreat, an ongoing sitting group, virtual groups. So I looked them up, as I said. And in the Majjhima, there were 14 suttas which referenced the three refuges as a group. I did read them all. I'm not going to talk about the details of those at all. What struck me from reading them all was that the refuges are mentioned in the very last paragraph of most of those suttas, and that's the only place that they showed up. So either the very last paragraph or the last paragraph of a big chunk. And as you may know, these suttas are often conversations between the Buddha and somebody that's come to him for advice
to ask a question or sometimes to overtly challenge the Buddha's teaching. And there's often a series of questions and answers between the Buddha and the person. And that was a scenario in all 14 of the ones that they're referenced, the refuges. And so finally, after a series of questions and answers, the person is convinced of the logic of the Buddha's teaching and the wisdom of what he's saying, and they subsequently take refuge. And they, that's why it's in the last paragraph. And I'll just read you the paragraph. So the person has kind of got it and says, "Magnificent, Master Gotama. Magnificent, Master Gotama. Master Gotama has made the Dhamma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what had been overthrown, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see forms. I go to Master Gotama for refuge, and to the Dhamma, and to the Sangha of Bhikkhus. From today, let Master Gotama remember me as a lay follower who has gone to him for refuge for life." So, a lamp on the path, turning upright what was overthrown. I can't remember what the other one was. Oh, yeah. We're just revealing what was hidden. So this idea of refuge is points to being shown a way rather than being given a concrete kind of thing or an object or a location. And the other thing that struck me from the readings was that the refuges were not taken lightly. So even though some of the people that were in these conversations were quite skeptical and their intention had been to upend the Buddha's teachings, that in fact they were finally convinced that it was through a lot of questioning and a lot of pondering and a lot of back and forth. So it wasn't a blind vow that was taken. So the idea that taking refuge does not mean picking up an idea or a person or a teaching as the thing. All of it, if you remembered a lamp revealing what was hidden, upraying, that the refuge was in being shown something. It was not in the thing itself. So attaching refuge or in a person or a specific teaching in anything that's impermanent. Teachers die. Sanghas disband. Teachings unfold and change. So we cannot hold those things too tightly. It won't work. So what on earth does this mean for us here on retreat? And this is when I got bogged down writing because I couldn't figure out how to talk about what the refuges were for us as we were here. It seemed all too much. So what I did remember, which was my own little lamp, was that when I'm really lost and confused and overwhelmed, I do know that it is not the time for fancy psychological footwork or new and sophisticated ideas or complicated analysis. I need simple, basic things that I can remember, which means there can only be like four of them. And hopefully they're things that I've already learned. And if I can't remember them, that there's something that
kind of twigs me to go back to it. Some lamp that gets turned on in the dark that tells me which way to go. So sometimes I need to be reminded, and sometimes I need someone I trust, like a teacher, to give me guidance. It's like a lamp on the path. So I go, hopefully, to what is already there. And the path of these teachings is already there for us if we can find and remember a way to go back. So we all need a lamp in the dark. And I can't possibly know what a lamp in the dark is for any of you as individuals, other than the kind of the all-encompassing but kind of vague refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So what I decided to do was to just share, I think, 3 or 4 things that are lamps in my dark. So when I'm really lost and down a rabbit hole, and these are the things that will come often spontaneously into my brain that are so helpful to just remind me what I'm doing. And because this is a talk about the Red 3 refuges, I tried to organize them so it sounds like they belong in those categories. So in the refuge in the Buddha category, keeping alive the awareness that there's a possibility of awakening, that the story that tells me that, that reminds me of that, was something very small that happened. I was in India on pilgrimage with Norman several years ago, and I think we were in Bodh Gaya, which is the site of the Buddha's awakening. And we had been somewhere, and I had bought a little package of something, which I had eaten, and I had the package. And I didn't know what to do with it. Any of you that have been to India might know that garbage is a problem, because there's no means to deal with it, so it's everywhere. And so I have my package in my pocket, and we're just walking around town, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, I gotta take this back to the hotel and put it in the garbage. And then I looked around and I thought, it doesn't really matter if I take this back to the hotel and put it in the garbage. I might as well just throw it on the ground. There's no point. Like, this is foolishness. But my hand was stuck in my pocket holding on to this package because you don't throw garbage on the street, right? And I couldn't do it, and I tried to talk myself into throwing it on the street because it seemed futile. I knew it made no difference to the situation in India whether I kept that in my pocket or I threw it on the street. It made no difference. Logically, I knew this. I even tried to talk myself into it. But the resistance that I felt, it was as if my hand was not in my... So it was frozen. I could not move my hand. And the resistance that I felt was not logical. It was in my body from some other place. And so whenever I am stuck in a place, when I look around this planet and I think, what are we doing? It doesn't matter what I do. I remember the feeling of my hand in my pocket, and I remember that it did matter. It didn't matter to India that I did that. It probably didn't matter to any other human being. It changed nothing. But what it did was it kept me open to the possibility of awakening, and that even though I couldn't know the outcome, now, from where I am now, I know that that kept alive something in me that it does matter. It does matter what we do. No matter, and if you, so outcomes don't always happen right away. Karma is outcomes of volitional actions of body, speech, or mind. And that outcome might happen tomorrow, or it might happen in 100 years, and we don't know. So trusting kind of non-harming behavior to be a good idea, even when there's no apparent benefit, is a good idea. You don't know. And I don't know what it would have changed in me, but I had a sense in that moment that it was going to change something very important. If I had crossed that line, I don't think I would be the same person. So that's a little thing that was a big lamp, and it comes to me all the time. So that's my one lamp. What time is it? So never think that it doesn't matter what you do. Everything you do matters. Everything. Yeah. If I move to refuge in the Dhamma, my little lamp on the path for that is the phrase, suffering and the end of suffering. It's a fragment of a phrase. It's not complete. The full phrase comes from the Majjhima 22:38. I don't know the name of it. I didn't write it down. And the full phrase is bhikkhus, the Buddha is saying, and he's addressing people who have accused him of teaching something reprehensible, and he's kind of standing up for himself. And he says, bhikkhus, both formerly and now, what I teach is suffering and the cessation of suffering. That's a lot. Suffering and the end of suffering. That phrase comes to me, and it pops into my head when I need to hear it, and I'm very grateful for that. It connects me to right intention, intention for non-harming, non-ill will, renunciation, and it guides my action. And it comes to me in moments when I couldn't think a bigger thought. I need one of those just simple, straightforward lamps. I'm angsting about something, and I just hear it. Ange, you have a choice in every moment, suffering or relief of suffering. And that frame helps me figure out what to do. And sometimes we have to open to the unpleasant, you know, to not harm. We have to be willing to have the unpleasantness in a situation in order to discern what's good action. I'm not going there. The third under Sangha, the phrase that comes to me is something that my first teacher, who did die, would always say. He would say, it takes a Buddha and a Buddha to awaken. It takes a Buddha and a Buddha, or a Buddha and a Buddha. I have no idea if that phrase comes from something, you know, official. I don't know if it was just his phrase, and I didn't even want to look it up and find out. I love it. It speaks to Sangha. It speaks to the fact that we need each other, that we cannot do this alone, that everything we do matters. It matters that we, you know, make one last trip in the car. It matters that we're kind to somebody who's grumpy. it matters that we don't use single-use plastic. It all matters. And you cannot know the outcomes of those. So I think it teaches us about love, and that which we love, we look after. I just lost my train of thought. Yes, we need each other. And that's why we come together. That's why we're here on retreat. You can't do this at home. And retreats come at a cost, you know. I was struck, today is Mother's Day, right? In case no one knew that. And I know that, you know, with the idea of refuge that I started out with was a much more cozy place than it turns out to be. It was kind of, oh, refuge, doesn't that sound nice? And refuge is not comfortable. The definition of a refuge is it's a shelter that you go to when pursued or in danger. So it's safety. It may be better than not, but refuge is not the same as comfortable. Going to the Buddha for refuge does not create comfort. The Dhamma creates change and, you know, kind of turmoil in its own way. The Sangha is challenging. There's other people. So it takes a Buddha and a Buddha. And it takes a Buddha and a Buddha. It's hard. So the idea that we can awaken without it being difficult, without changing, that is, you know, is a bit of a delusion. You know, it's not just a feel-good practice. We have to open. I think Norman talked about opening to unpleasant, being able to stay with unpleasant. Is it, that moment we can choose suffering or not suffering. If I get, if I cling to pleasant and I'm averse to unpleasant and I go down that path of story and action, I've chosen suffering. If I can bear to stay with the unpleasant, if I can put some space around my experience, I give myself the opportunity for less suffering of self and others. It's a Buddha and a Buddha. I've run out of lamps. So I'm gonna summarize with the summary that I summarize every talk with, which is really an encouragement to practice. Practice, practice, practice. Even if you can't remember why you're practicing, don't worry about that. Just do it. Trust that other people, including yourself, have already decided this is a good idea. Right? It's true. Coming on retreat is a good idea, even though we're not always sure why we came once we're here, because it's hard. But if it was a good idea, determined, you know, not in the midst of it, it's a good idea. It's a lamp. Okay. So, you know, I know I say this every time, but doing nothing, hiding, minding your own business is not doing no harm. You cannot act. You cannot escape the web of interconnection. Hiding does not remove you from interdependence. It just means you're not contributing in the way that you could. So like it or not, we are all in this together. It does take a Buddha and a Buddha. And the difference between hiding and refuge is that we take refuge so that we can go back out. We turn the light on, not because the light itself is the answer, but because it shows us something. So take all the refuge you need. Look after yourselves. And then go back out. That's why we take refuge, so that we can go back out and contribute. The world needs you. You need you. Your family needs you. Your pet needs you. The emperor penguins need you. Esther the wonder pig needs you. So take as much refuge as you need, and then go back out. And I'm going to stop there, and we have about 4 minutes, so maybe we'll just sit.
So this is a period of walking or sitting, and then at 8:30 is hot drink or more walking and sitting.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.